I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Andrea G. from Cape Cod.
I'm Andrea, I'm an addict. And I'm not really sure what's going to come out of my mouth. I can share that I've been clean now longer than I used. That's cool. And living in the solution, I almost felt like we needed to add one more piece, living in the solution in the program, because that's where I learned how to live in the program. It's working the steps. I've worked the steps more than one time. I have a friend back on the Cape that talks about the disease. If you go to one of those, to a carnival, to one of those games where those things bop their heads up and you have to keep going bounce, bounce, bounce to knock them down, that's what my disease does for me. When I finally got to the place where drugs weren't dogging me, I had a whole lot of other stuff dogging me. And I found that I've had to use the steps in every area where my life is unmanageable and I'm not living in the solution. I think what I want to share, I've had at least three situations in the last 24 years that have caused me to stop and say, where is God in all of this? Because in those situations is where we learn to live in the solution. It's pretty easy for me to live my life in the solution when everything's going along smoothly. But when I've had challenges in recovery that have been harder challenges than I actually had when I was using. I mean, so that's not everyone's story, but that's my story. The first one I want to share, I was a teacher of the deaf, and I used all the time as a teacher of the deaf, and the great thing about working with deaf kids is they couldn't tell. And their parents didn't know sign language, so they couldn't tell their parents. Hey! If you're going to be an addict and you're going to be a teacher, you better figure out how to cover it up, right? So I just forgot what I was going to say. Ugh. Oh, I know. I had a chance. I actually got clean on Martha's Vineyard. I lived in Lansing, Michigan, which is the capital of Michigan, in the inner city, you know, could be on the streets, do whatever I needed to do, and moved to Martha's Vineyard. I had a son. I have a son. He was, I think, 7 when we moved. And this is a miracle. The day that we were moving, my son went to say goodbye to his friend. At 7 years old, my son's friend had just got his first bag of pot. And had I not left, I didn't know I was leaving to get clean. I was using. I didn't know that that was what the geographic was about for me. But luckily, I called my son, you know, beep the horn, and he got his ass out to the car and didn't try his first joint at 7 years old. There's an intervention, you know? I had a chance to go work in England at a school for the deaf. And one of the things I can share is that when you get a chance to do things beyond your wildest dreams, I mean, that was definitely, I grew up in Detroit. I wasn't leaving Detroit, let alone going to another country. I got this chance to go to England, and the day that my mother was going to come and visit me, I buried her. And it was interesting because I found wherever you move, and I've moved around a lot, NA is always there. NA was in England. And the people that I got a temporary sponsor, I kept my sponsor. The people that were my support group while I was working in England, you know, I got the call from my sister, you know, mom died. And what do you do with that? I'm in another country, and she's supposed to be coming to visit me in 2 weeks? Wait, this is not right. A lot of stuff isn't quite right. And where is God in all of this? You know, God's carried me all this way, and then I get over to another country, and find out, you know, my mom dies and I'm supposed to figure out a way to get back. And I made one phone call to one of the people in my network in England, and within probably 10 minutes, there were like five or six women in my house. And I couldn't talk. I couldn't function at all. And, you know, my credit was really shitty, so I didn't have a credit card. Those women knew that I had to get an airline ticket back to the States, back to Detroit, to bury my mother. They went and took their credit cards and their ATMs, and they took out the money for my airline ticket and brought that money back so that I could fly back to the United States. I don't know anybody in all of my using time that would have cared enough to do anything like that. And that was like the first glimmer I had of, I couldn't live in a solution. I couldn't live in anything. I was in shock. And the fellowship carried me. I was so much in shock that I couldn't, well, I don't even know who bought the airline ticket. They drove me to the airport, put me on the plane, and, you know, when you get bumped up when it's bereavement, and it was a transatlantic flight, and the steward walks over and he said, "You're in first class. You can have anything you want." "Well, you know those reservations we have? I'll stay clean unless so-and-so dies." Well, my mom, I wasn't quite sure that I was committed to staying clean. And when the guy walked over and said, "You can have anything you want," and I'm in first class, and I just said, "You know, I've had a really hard day today." Because I knew that those people that got their money, bought my airline ticket, put me on the plane, and the addicts that were picking me up on the other side, I could not use. I lived in the solution of the fellowship. I mean, a friend of mine said to me, I'm staying with her for a few days, and she said, "You know, God doesn't give me more than I can do." Guess what? God does give me more than I can do. That's why it's a we fellowship. We can handle anything. I alone cannot handle anything. I can't live in the solution without the we. I can't live without you in this fellowship. So the long and short of it is that, you know, people in recovery, you know, picked me up at the airport, carried me through the funeral, put me back on the plane. And I still had to finish out my gig working in England. And lots and lots and lots of miracles happened during that time. Spiritual things that I never realized would happen. One of the things, because I'm an interpreter and I do American Sign Language, I got home and on my answering machine there was a call that said, "We need for you to call us because we need an interpreter." Well, in England they use a different sign language system, and I'm thinking, what the hell are they calling me for? I don't know I know a little British sign, but I'm not an interpreter. They needed an American Sign Language interpreter. And I called the guy back, and he said, "You have to come to the morgue." Well, man, I've been working with the deaf for a long time, and I have never had a job at the morgue before. It turned out that there was an elderly Canadian couple, and the wife died. She died exactly the way my mother died. Exactly. And she bought vacation insurance. I know my mom didn't buy vacation insurance. And as I got done doing that job, and I walked out of that morgue, and I told them, "I'm not like going to be with the body. I've already had enough of that stuff." And they said, "No, you don't have to be with the body." But I needed to be with the guy that whose wife had just died. I found out that it cost like $50,000 to bring a body back from the United States. And as I walked out, as hard as my relationship was with my mom, the last 3 years of my recovery, we really were able to, I was able to make amends, and she was able to make amends. And I knew she was showing me that everything happened exactly the way it was. Even though it was not the way I wanted it to happen, it happened exactly the way it was supposed to happen. One of the other things, in the last two little stories I want to tell you are pretty recent. I had a chance to go work in Connecticut, and was sponsoring a woman. She'd been in prison, and First time she called and we were going to get together, she asked me to sponsor. And she stood me up and I called. And, I guess I have one of those faces. I might look like I'm really, I guess I do have a soft heart, but I'm pretty strong when it comes to recovery. And no bullshit. And when she stood me up, I called her up and I said, this is a life and death situation. Make a decision. Either you're going to work with me or not, and if you're not, it's okay. But find somebody you're going to work with. So she made a commitment. She had a problem with God. I was still working through all my stuff about what God was all about and all that. And one of the things that helped me is I asked her to look for coincidences and synchronicities. You know, you see something good happen for another person, start looking for that stuff because that's God revealing God. And thank God this woman did it because, one, I guess I sponsored her probably 6 months. We were starting to develop a relationship. Got a call at 9 o'clock at night. Andrea, you got to come. Vinny's been shot. Vinny was her son. And I knew as I got in the car that Vinny was dead. He had been shot in the head by another addict who was using. And I can remember driving, you know, over the bridge to New London to the hospital. They had all these police around. Nobody was around. I parked my car and I walked in, and it was chilling. It was scary because there was nobody around. And I walked in, and the I guess he was a detective. I don't really know for sure who he was, but he said, you know, come in here. And Vinny had been shot and half of his head blown off in his mom's apartment by a relative. It was not pretty. So we got through all of that. It was a Tuesday that he was shot, and she called me and said the next day, Wednesday night, there's a Wednesday night meeting in Connecticut that's a candlelight meeting. She said, will you please go to that meeting with me? I knew she was in the fellowship. Her son was in the fellowship. The guy who shot him had been in the fellowship and relapsed and hadn't found his way back. So the drama, you know. Living in the solution is not living in the drama. You want to get away from drama as quickly. For me, living in the solution has nothing to do with drama and chaos. It's about where is that quiet place, the serenity, where is God when it seems like God's not anywhere to be seen. So Sue and I sit down, and everybody in the meeting, you know, everybody who raised their hand talked about her son. And there was this little red candle. It was a glass candle, round, sitting between she and I. And nobody had said Vinny's name. And the last person who raised their hand, and it was interesting. It kind of went around. It wasn't one where you have to talk, but it just was that way. The last person started to talk about Vinny and said Vinny's name. And do you know that candle? There was a little, it like shot out this little red marble. It didn't break the candle. It shot out a little red marble thing. And I thought, because, you know, Sue kept saying, Andrea, you keep telling me, where's God? And I didn't know what to say to her. Except when it shot out the little red marble and it fell between us, she goes, that wasn't a coincidence, was it? And I said, hell no! God's showing up, honey. I don't know what all this means. I don't know why your son was murdered. I don't know. But God's still here. God's here, and I don't know what this is all about. Living in the solution is finding the reason for me why I'm still on this planet when I shouldn't have been on this planet many, many times over. And why you're here on this on this planet. We're here till we're not here. I mean, who knew that it was Vinny's last day? The last story I want to share with you. I came back to Massachusetts from Connecticut, and I was working in Brockton, which is a really tough town to work in. A lot of poverty, a lot of violence, and the kids really suffer as a result of it. And It was a really, I was working with little kids too, and it was so dysfunctional. And I just, you know, when you're pushing against the wind and it's not right, I finally got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore. I had worked from September to December, and I didn't have it in me to do it anymore. And I had always fought the good fight. In recovery, I learned how to show up, do the next right thing, and just keep going. And I couldn't do it anymore. My body broke down. I couldn't do it. And I remember calling my doctor from my classroom and saying, I can't do this anymore. I'm like at the point of a breakdown. And I don't even know what a nervous breakdown is. I don't know if it was a nervous breakdown. It was just like, I can't do this anymore. And went to my doctor and she said, you can't do this anymore. So I had to leave that job. And I'd never left a job like that before. And I left it with them feeling, I mean, usually I leave and people are glad that I had come. Nobody was glad that I had been at that school. I wasn't glad that I was at that school. I was letting the little kids down. It was really shitty. And my health was really in bad shape. And because I wasn't working, I didn't have money, so I knew I was going to lose my apartment. And for about 4 or 5 months, I hadn't left my apartment, but I knew I was losing my apartment. My health insurance wasn't going to be available, and I didn't know what to do. It's that place, it's a place of desperation, and it can happen in recovery. You know, I believe I live a program of recovery, but life on life's terms provides opportunities to continue to that challenge me. That's the deal. I can say that today. You know, all right, Andrea, what's it really, you know, where's your commitment? I've had to recommit many times in my recovery. Probably every 2 or 3 years I have to make a commitment to my recovery. Because meetings can fall off. I start character assassinating and do all the stuff that we all do, you know, and it's like all of a sudden, you guys are assholes and I'm not going to hang with you anymore, you know? So I have to make a commitment to my recovery and show up and tell on myself. And I've just come through a really dark time of not having health insurance, having to live with someone and not be able to pay any money, and not having a job and not being able to work, and kind of losing my identity. You know, when we get clean and we start to gather things up, we get jobs, we get money, we get, you know, money, property, prestige. I got to the point where I realized, oh my God, none of this defines who I am. My job doesn't define it, how much money, where I live, whether I have a place to live or not. And it's really, it's humorous to me now. It was not humorous, but probably within two-day period, housing came together, health insurance came together, and I knew I was going to be okay. I semi-retired. I can't afford to totally retire because my retirement isn't enough, but things came together. It was one of the lowest times in my life, not only in recovery, but in my life, when everything that I tried to do felt like chaos, disease, and a mess, and I wasn't using. And it's, where is God in all of this? And it was just about hanging on. I went to meetings every day. You know, I went right back to my basics and got to the point where I'm okay today. I'm getting old, I limp around, I don't do it the way I used to do it, I don't have the energy to do it the way I used to do it, but I go to meetings, I work with my sponsor, I have sponsees, I do service work, and most importantly, the 24 spiritual principles, the traditions that teach us how to live with each other, and the steps that teach me how to live with myself and how to treat you, that's my experience, strength, and hope. That's it.
Thank you, Andrea. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Karen W. from Frederick, Maryland.
Hi, my name's Karen, and I'm an addict. There's a whole lot of you. My heart's like beating out of my chest. And I don't think I've ever spoken in front of this many people. And I definitely don't have as much clean time as you. And you did such a great job. And so now I'm even more scared. So if I like puke or if I fall over, like, I'm okay, really, I'm okay. Wow. I just really like want to thank people that asked me to come up and do this. Like, to me, like, this was my first convention I ever went to. I'm like, I'm speaking at it, dude. Like, that's crazy. That really is crazy. And so funny. My sponsor's here, and she told God, your sponsor remembers everything, don't they? And she remembers how I was when I was first here at my first convention. I had, like, I probably had less than 30 days clean. And she remembers, and it was, like, right out here, people. It was right out here. And I at that point in my life, I was really, I had no idea who I was. I had no idea what I liked or didn't like. I had no opinion. I just did whatever everybody else was doing because I was with them, you know? And if I was with these other people, then I'd do whatever they wanted me to do, you know? I could just kind of, like, did whatever because I didn't know who I was. I had no values. I had no beliefs. I had no idea. I was clueless. And I'm walking around out here and, you know, I have newcomer written all over me. and this guy started talking to me, and he asked me for my phone number. And I know, because my sponsor told me that I'm not supposed to hang out with guys when I don't have any clean time, pretty much. And he asked me for my phone number, and I gave him a fake one. And she pulled me aside, and she was like, because I didn't really want to give him my phone number, but I was like, I didn't want him to be mad, or I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I didn't even know the dude, you know what I mean? And so she pulled me, she's like, why didn't you just say no? And I was like, I hadn't even thought of that. Like, just saying no was not an option. Like, I had to do this stuff. I had to turn the wheels, and I had to play the game, and I had to you know what I mean? And she just reminded me of that when I came up here. And living in the solution for me is that I get to say no today. And that is an accomplishment. Okay, that is an accomplishment. Because today, at this convention, I do have values, and I do have beliefs, and I do have an opinion, and I will share it with you when asked. But for the sake of, you know, Narcotics Anonymous and the spirituality of this program, I'm going to try to turn down my ego as much as possible and keep my opinion to myself. But I will share with you my experience. With living in the solution. And gosh, this is like the broadest topic ever. Living in the solution. There's so much that goes along with that. But I think like the primary point for me is that there is no way in hell I'm going to live in the solution unless I want to, or unless there's some driving desperation force that's going to make that change or make me really want that change. And that's what happened when I hit my bottom. So I'm not going to go and, you know, talk about what I use, where I use. We all know what we did, pretty much. That's why we're all here. It had to be pretty damn bad if we're all here at a convention for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, it was bad. It was real bad. But it was the love that I saw in the fellowship. And I saw these people, because I came in, you know, I came to this convention. I didn't stay clean after that. Like, I came in and out of the rooms for about a year. I realize now that I did not have to do that, but that's what happened to me. I didn't have to do that. I could have just stayed. And what happened was, whenever I'd go back out, I'd hear about like people going to conventions and going to campouts, like hanging out with people and doing step work, and like the way that you guys were was just like, it just seemed so nice. like, it reminded me, like, when I was a kid and, like, my family was real messed up, like, I used to watch this show called Seventh Heaven, and I used to look at their family, and I was like, oh my gosh, why can't mine be like that? And that's how it was with people in Narcotics Anonymous. I was like, why can't I have that? And they were like, wake up, Karen, you can have it, you know? Like, just do what we do. And I got to the point where, like, I started to regret when I would go out and come back, and, like, I started to really feel bad about it. And I don't know, man, like, I went to treatment with the help of people in Narcotics Anonymous, like, calling me and asking me, oh, we haven't seen you in a while, what's going on? You know, like, that kind of stuff. And the point is, like, I got back from treatment, and I really, really, really wanted this program. Like, I really wanted to live in the solution. And I don't think I was 100% willing at first, but let me tell you what, after I did my first step, I totally was. And that's where the solution is. Like, it's in the steps. It's in the steps, and it's in the traditions. And I have to be around other recovering addicts to allow them to teach me how to do this. Okay? I have to be here. And the biggest person in my life that teaches me how to live a program of recovery is my sponsor. And I'm gonna cry. But when I first got clean, she gave me this big sticker, one of those stickers you can go out to merchandise, and it said surrender on it, real big, right? And I had no idea what surrender was, but I know I really, really wanted it. Whatever that was, whatever you guys had, I finally really, really wanted it. Really bad. And, you know, I decided that I was going to let her help me. Because she was my sponsor the whole time I was coming in and out of the program. Because I never let her help me. Like, I never let her actually... I never did what she told me to do! You know, the program only works when we actually do it! Weird, right? you know, I really did. I did, like, everything she told me to do. Like, I was a waitress, and I was a horrible waitress, and I just listened to her. I didn't give my phone number to any guys. I didn't give any guys any fake numbers either. I learned how to say no, like, real quick, right? And it was a good thing. It was a really good thing for me. And talking about living in the solution, from a very early point in recovery, I started doing things that scared the crap out of me, okay? And for me, whenever I get scared, like right now, it's probably because I'm doing something that I'm really supposed to do and that my higher power wants me to do. I just don't feel up to the challenge, and that's why I get scared, okay? And one of the biggest things that first scared me, well, first off, I was hanging out with women in the program. That kind of scared me. somebody laughed. Because, like, I grew up with two sisters, right? And I was always really competitive. We used to ride horses, and, like, we used to always be trying to, like, one-up each other. So to me, women were, like, competition. Like, I had to be better than you, and if I thought you were better than me, then I didn't want to be your friend because I felt really insecure and all this stuff, right? So it took me a while to, like, get okay hanging out with women and doing, like, you know, women stuff. But that was scary. But you know what? Like, I'm so happy. I'm so, so freaking happy that I have girlfriends today, man. Let me tell you what. Because they stay by you no matter what. Like, if the dude leaves, the girls are still there. You know, that's awesome. And, yeah, that's awesome, man. The other thing that really scared me when I first got clean was that I got accepted to college because I dropped out before. Yeah, you can't really, like, do drugs and not the drugs that I was doing and go to college and actually think you're going to stay in there. That's funny. And so I was in college, right? Well, I got accepted to this different college a couple hours away. And I was really scared to go, like, I was really scared to go, because I was going to be living with, like, five other college girls that I didn't know, and, like, I know what college people do, dude, like, I was there. I dropped out of one, okay? I know what they do. And so I was really scared when I moved up to this area, but I moved to the Pocono area of Narcotics Anonymous, and, oh my God, they were so nice. They're so nice to me, and like I was so willing, I was so wanting to live in the solution that like my sponsor drove me up there, and like I got my student ID, and we saw where I was gonna live, and I went to a meeting, and I got all the women's numbers, and at that meeting they did like women with 90 days or more, so that I could call, you know what I mean? So I was hanging out with, you know, people that had a little bit of time. And I called every woman on that list when I got up there, and I asked for rides to meetings because I didn't know where I was going. And that was, like, real scary for me. Like, I remember crying, you know, driving my car up there with all my stuff in it, like, not knowing anybody 3 hours away. Like, I had pretty much, when I got clean, ripped off everything that was comfortable to me, like a Band-Aid. Like, the boyfriend was gone, my house was gone, I moved, I was hanging out with women and not dudes, and like just God, like that was so scary. Like everything that was comfortable in my life was just like I dumped it like the drugs. And I started doing what my sponsor was telling me to do. And I remember walking around campus like feeling real weird. You know, I only had like maybe 60 or 90 days clean at this point. Like walking around campus feeling like everybody's looking at me, and like I remember calling my sponsor like just crying over nothing. Because I was scared, just scared all the time. And when I started to live in the solution, I started to realize, like, everybody else is just as insecure as I am, and everybody's way too self-centered to really be thinking about what I'm doing on campus. So I should just chill out and enjoy my day. And that's how I can, like, change my whole day around today. Is that if I'm starting to feel, like, down about myself and, like, insecure and afraid and stuff, I can be like, you know what? This is my disease. You know, I'm an addict no matter if I'm using drugs or if I'm not using drugs. I'm still an addict. Okay? And my disease lives in my head, and it's a lot of fear. Okay? Fear, it's like a lot of fear. And when I can shut that off and just live from my heart, then I'm living in the solution. Then I can feel peace. I can forget about all the crap that my head is telling me. And I can actually have a great day. Yay! You know? So and I can see. The thing is awareness. I know when that is happening now. And when I know, I can actually do something about it. I'm not powerless over that. Okay? Awareness it empowers me to do something about whatever's going on. Okay, so I did this whole thing in the Poconos. Let me tell you what, like, my first year clean up there was freaking awesome. I had so much fun. I went to conventions. Like, I was hanging out with women. I had a best friend, and she was a girl, and I was staying away from guys, and I was doing my steps, and I was going to school, and I was getting good grades, and I started to feel really, really good about myself. Like, really good about myself. And I didn't tell you this, guys. I was in the Air Force, right? I was in the military, yeah. You wouldn't tell by looking at me, but I was. I was in the Air Force for 6 years. And I almost got kicked out of that, too. And that was real scary. Oh, you don't want to mess around with the U.S. government. They're no joke. And when I had a year clean, just about the time I had a year clean, my supervisor from the military, she came up to me and she was crying. And this is a miracle, you know, like this is a miracle that has happened to me in recovery by living in the solution. She came up to me and she's like, Karen, she's like, I don't know what you're doing, but whatever it is you're doing, just keep doing it. You're doing such a great job. And this is from the people that were going to kick me out and, you know, give me a dishonorable discharge and like ruin my credit for the rest of my life. Seriously, it would have. Like, you get serious trouble getting kicked out of the military. And that meant so much to me because that's like a normal earthling person telling me I'm doing a good job. So like not just people in recovery can see it. Other people out there can see what we do. They see it. They see the miracle in our lives. And they don't care if we're addicts. To them, they don't know what that is. They don't know what we go through. You know, they just see the difference. That's how I knew I was getting better. That's one of those things that made me keep going. Because you hear a lot of times, like, people going out and using after they have a year clean. It's stuff like that happened that made me stay. It was the result. It was the miracle that had happened over that first year. And I saw all that stuff working in my life. That's what I knew I had to keep coming back for. I had to keep coming back. because I wanted that stuff to keep happening. And it did. It kept happening. And it still, let me tell you what, man, it still happens. And I truly believe that it will always, always happen no matter what I'm going through. Because it's not only the hard times that we go through in recovery that we might use over, it's also the good stuff, okay? Because when I graduated college and all my friends were going out to the bars, I was super jealous. Like, I was like, man, I'm 23 years old and I gotta sit in this apartment and smoke cigarettes with my, you know, my roommate and look at all the people down on the street that are, you know, having fun and graduating and I should be out there, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, like, when I get like that, man, somebody's got to, like, smack me in the face with some reality. Like, you are an addict. You cannot do that. You're not a normal person. You're never going to be normal. It's never going to happen. Get over it, you know? Like, I can be mad at the fact that I'm an addict some days because I lose my self-acceptance. Okay? Once I lose that, then I start to get really angry and jealous at the world and rah, rah, rah. So I try not to do that. But that was, you know, one of my reservations. I remember, you know, it's funny when you write stuff down, like when you write your steps, because you actually, I remember it. I remember what I write. And one of my reservations is when I get out of the military and I get out of college and I ain't got nothing to, you know, get me in trouble anymore, I think I can use, you know. Those days come and went, and I never used. You know, at that point, like, I had seen so many miracles happen in my life. I didn't want to mess it up, you know. And I graduated college with a 3.69 GPA. With a bachelor's degree. Addicts are smart people. We are super duper smart. And I remember, you know, it's not easy. Anything that I want, I can have, but I have to be willing to put the effort in to get it. And I was willing. I really wanted to graduate college really bad, just like I wanted to stay clean really bad. And just like I was a student as a sponsee, I had to ask for help. I had to ask for help as a student in school. I learned how to do everything in Narcotics Anonymous. So when I go to my sponsor, I'm like, I don't know what to do. Help me. I had to take that, and I had to go in class, and I had to sit there and be like, I don't know what you're talking about, help me. Because there's some humility in being okay with not knowing what you're doing. And as a newcomer, I got to come into this program and realize that I don't know how to do shit, and I better listen to the people that do. And that's living in the solution. This is so weird. Let's see. So that was another big thing, that another big miracle that happened to me in my recovery. And man, like, life is really good. And when it's bad, it's bad. But usually today, things are bad because of stuff that's happening that I have no control over. You know, like, I lost my mom too. I was setting up my home group, making coffee, and my little sister called me and told me that my mom died. I was at my home group. I was, like, in the safest place possible. And my sponsee sister at the time drove me over there, and she stayed with me the whole time. And my sponsor is in Costa Rica, and she called me from Costa Rica. And there was always somebody there the whole time, because that was my reservation. If one of my parents dies, I remember writing it down there. And I never got to a place where I was, like, okay with my mom, I guess. Like, we never got to that place, because my mom and my dad are both, you know, they're addicts. My dad goes to the other fellowship, but, you know, I come from a family of addicts. And if the family member is still using, it's still really hard to have a relationship with them. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff there. But I didn't use, okay? It hurt real, real bad, and it really sucked, and it still really sucks to know that, you know, my mom's not here anymore. But let me tell you what, man, like, my family in Narcotics Anonymous, like, some, on a lot of days, I feel closer to them than my own family. It was not fun growing up in my house a lot of days. It was very weird, because nobody wanted to, like, talk about real problems or real feelings or really what was going on. And that's what builds relationships, and that's what makes me feel close to people. So I found that type of love in Narcotics Anonymous. Everybody needs that, man. It's a human thing. Everybody needs to feel like they connect and that they're loved. When we don't feel that, we feel miserable and we go and we use. That's what happens when we stop going to meetings. So I feel that. I find that type of love and peace more so in my Narcotics Anonymous family sometimes than my actual own family. But that's okay, you know, like, that's okay. At least I'm getting it from somewhere. What are some other things? Oh, yeah. I just, like, there's stuff happens. Because, like, I truly believe that stuff will happen if I'm doing the right thing and I'm putting every single effort in to do what I need to do, then my higher power or whatever that is out there is going to kind of fill in the blanks. Like, stuff is going to get pieced together as long as I need to do, as long as I'm doing what I need to do, it's all going to be taken care of. That's faith. That comes from the heart, okay? My brain tells me all this logical crap that's fear-based. But true faith is a risk. It's something that we gotta do. And it's almost like if my higher power sees me doing this, then he's like, all right, Karen, I see you. Let's make this happen. But it's like he's gotta see the effort first. And I'll give you an example of that. So I really, really, really wanted to live on my own. Like, I had always had roommates. I started a relationship with this guy that I've been with for a couple years now, and he's really awesome. But I really wanted to live on my own before I ever moved in with him. And I was living downtown. I was getting real sick of the noise. I was getting sick of my OCD roommate, and I really just wanted to live on my own. And I found this apartment, like this beautiful apartment, but it was kind of expensive because I was working this one job and I couldn't really afford it. But, like, I was like, you know what? I just have to not have cable and live in the Stone Age and not have internet and live in the Stone Age, and at least I'll have my own place. And that's what I did. I took a risk. I was like, I'm going to really have to watch my money, but I really, really, really want this apartment because it was, like, out in this nice wooded area with a deck, and it was in the country, and it wasn't too far from where I worked. It was great, man. 3 months after that, like, my job started to really upset me. Like, I really wasn't happy there anymore. So, well, actually, I had been looking for, that job had upset me for a long time. And I had been looking for a job for a long, long time, you know. And everybody's like, don't quit. You're lucky. You should be lucky you have a job. And this economy sucks. And you're never going to find nothing. And da 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 da. And I'm like, don't believe it. Don't believe it. I can do this. I can do this. And my sponsor's, like, telling me, like, look here and do this and do that. So I'm looking and I applied, and I went for a group interview, and then they called me back, and I went for a second interview, and then I had to take this weird, like, personality test thing online, right? And meanwhile, like, all this stuff, other stuff is going on in my job that I'm with, that I'm not really making a lot of money at, and I can't really afford my apartment, but I want it anyway. And to my sponsor's suggestion, she's like, you need to quit that job. You're miserable. You gotta stop. You're making yourself miserable. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so crazy. This is nuts. This is insane. And, like, some stuff really happened there that really upset me. So I put in my 2 weeks. I knew I was going to be really screwed if I didn't find another job. I really wasn't going to be able to afford the apartment. And, you know, I trusted, though. Like, I really, really, really trust my sponsor. I think she's freaking crazy sometimes, but, like, I really trust her. And she said, you know, you gotta allow yourself, you know, the energy to put forth in finding a better place that you're gonna be more happy at. So I quit that job, and I was crying. I was so scared. I was like, I'm stupid. And I put my 2 weeks in, right? The very next day, the very next day, this company called me and they offered me this job, and it's at a school, and I love school because I was so good at school, and I really, really, really like it, and it paid a lot more, and I could afford my apartment, and then I got cable, and I got internet, and I had silverware. That is a freaking miracle, man. Like, I did everything I was supposed to do, and everything actually worked out the way it was supposed to work out. And, like, I have a beautiful apartment. I got a cat. Her name is Squirrel. Oh, she's cool. And, like, I can, and, you know, like, of this whole year, it's been one whole year. Next month is my last month there. So I'm going to move in with a boyfriend. That's really scary. That's way scarier than going to school. That's probably even more scarier than the military finding out that you're using drugs on base. It's scary. But we're going to do it. It's like jumping off a cliff. But I've been there this whole year by myself. So I've lived in an apartment by myself, paid all my bills, did everything I was supposed to do. And I feel so proud of myself, man. Like, I feel so good about whatever it takes. It's hard work. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program. Nobody ever said it was easy. Nobody. It's simple. It's simple. But I have to be willing to do whatever it takes. I have to be willing to put whatever effort it is in order for me to, like, do whatever it is that God needs me to do. You know, and I value that. Like, I value hard work because I see the rewards of it every day in my life because I feel so good about what I do. And, like, recently I've been doing these, like, I really want to run a 10K this year. I have no idea where this running thing came from, but, like, I started out with a 5. I just did an 8 2 weeks ago, so I did an 8K. I'm working my way up to the 10K. You know, it's stuff like this. It's stuff that, like this, that I have the opportunity to do whatever it is I want to do. Whatever it is God wants me to do. Because when I'm running these things, it's not just to go out there and run it. Like, I'm giving to charities. Like, I'm supporting other organizations. That shit makes me feel good, man. And it's good that, like, I truly believe today that whatever it is that I want to, whatever challenge that comes in my path or what I want to rise up to, I know I can do it. I know I can do it. Any single one of us can do whatever it is we want to do. We just have to be willing to do, you know, the steps, the traditions, putting in the work to get there. That is the solution. That is living in the solution. But we can only do that if we really want it. We have to really, really want it. You know, and let me tell you what, like, once I started to see these miracles happening in my life, how could I not say I didn't want that? I saw it happening, and it still happens, you know, like, I know that all these things that I'm terrified of, like moving in with a boyfriend and getting married and having kids, oh my God, I'm so terrified to have kids. I'm so, 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 so scared. But these are things I really want. And I know that if I live in the solution and I live from my heart and I let go of all that fear and I trust in God and I trust in the fellowship and I trust in my sponsorship family, that I am going to be able to do this. I'm going to be able to have the life that I've never dreamed possible. And when I get there, I'll come back here and I'll let you all know about it. Because it's happening already, you know, like, it's happening already. And I'm just so happy that I'm here, and I'm so happy that the Frederick area asked me to, you know, come up here and talk to you guys a little bit, and God, I'm running out of stuff, so I think I'm going to be done, because I'm going to start rambling, so everybody have a great convention, and go to the beach, and enjoy life!